At Dewa Daha, translated by Bhikkhu Bodhi. I have heard that on one occasion the Blessed One was staying among the Sakyans. Now the Sakyans have a city named Dewa Daha, and there the Blessed One addressed the monks. Monks? Yes, Lord, the monks responded. The Blessed One said, Monks, there are some Brahmins and contemplatives who teach in this way, who have this view. Whatever a person experiences, pleasure, pain, or neither pleasure nor pain, all is caused by what was done in the past. Thus, with the destruction of old actions through asceticism, and with the non-doing of new actions, there will be no consequence in the future. With no consequence in the future, there is the ending of action. With the ending of action, the ending of suffering. With the ending of suffering, the ending of feeling. With the ending of feeling, all suffering will be ended. Such is the teaching of the Nigantas. Going to Nigantas who teach in this way, I have asked them, Is it true, friend Nigantas, that you teach in this way, that you have this view? Whatever a person experiences, pleasure, pain, or neither pleasure nor pain, all is caused by what was done in the past. Thus, with the destruction of old actions through asceticism, and with the non-doing of new actions, there will be no consequence in the future. With no consequence in the future, there is the ending of action. With the ending of action, the ending of suffering. With the ending of suffering, the ending of feeling. With the ending of feeling, all suffering will be ended. Having been asked this by me, the Nigantas admitted, Yes. So I said to them, But friends, do you know that you existed in the past and that you did not exist? No, friend. And do you know that you did bad actions in the past and that you did not do them? No, friend. And do you know that you did such and such bad actions in the past? No, friend. And do you know that so-and-so much suffering has been ended, or that so-and-so much suffering remains to be ended, or that with the ending of so-and-so much suffering, all suffering will be ended? No, friend. But do you know what is the abandoning of unskillful mental qualities and the attainment of skillful mental qualities in the here and now? No, friend. So, friends, it seems that you don't know that you existed in the past and that you did not exist. You don't know that you did bad actions in the past and that you did not do them. You don't know that you did such and such bad actions in the past. You don't know that so and so much suffering has been ended, or that so and so much suffering remains to be ended, or that with the ending of so and so much suffering, all suffering will be ended. You don't know what is the abandoning of unskillful mental qualities and the attainment of skillful mental qualities in the here and now. That being the case, it is not proper for you to assert that, whatever a person experiences, pleasure, pain, or neither pleasure nor pain, all is caused by what was done in the past. Thus, with the destruction of old actions through asceticism, and with the non-doing of new actions, there will be no consequence in the future. With no consequence in the future, there is the ending of action. With the ending of action, the ending of suffering. With the ending of suffering, the ending of feeling. With the ending of feeling, all suffering will be ended. If, however, you knew that you existed in the past and that you did not exist, if you knew that you did bad actions in the past and that you did not do them, if you knew that you did such and such bad actions in the past, you don't know that so and so much suffering has been ended, or that so and so much suffering remains to be ended, or that with the ending of so and so much suffering, all suffering will be ended. If you knew what is the abandoning of unskillful mental qualities and the attainment of skillful mental qualities in the here and now, then, that being the case, it would be proper for you to assert that whatever a person experiences, pleasure, pain, or neither pleasure nor pain, all is caused by what was done in the past. Thus, with the destruction of old actions through asceticism, and with the non-doing of new actions, there will be no consequence in the future. With no consequence in the future, there is the ending of action. With the ending of action, the ending of suffering. With the ending of suffering, the ending of feeling. With the ending of feeling, all suffering will be ended. Friend Nigantas, it's as if a man was shot with an arrow thickly smeared with poison. As a result of being shot with the arrow, he would feel fierce, sharp, racking pains. His friends and companions, kinsmen and relatives, would provide him with a surgeon. The surgeon would cut around the opening of the wound with a knife. As a result of the surgeon's cutting around the opening of the wound with a knife, the man would feel fierce, sharp, racking pains. The surgeon would probe for the arrow with a probe. As a result of the surgeon's probing for the arrow with a probe, the man would feel fierce, sharp, racking pains. The surgeon would then pull out the arrow. As a result of the surgeon's pulling out the arrow, the man would feel fierce, sharp, racking pains. The surgeon would then apply a burning medicine to the mouth of the wound. As a result of the surgeon's applying a burning medicine to the mouth of the wound, the man would feel fierce, sharp, racking pains. But then at a later time, when the wound had healed and was covered with skin, he would be well and happy, free, master of himself, able to go wherever he liked. The thought would occur to him, "Before I was shot with an arrow thickly smeared with poison, as a result of being shot with the arrow, I felt fierce, sharp, racking pains. My friends and companions, kinsmen and relatives provided me with a surgeon. The surgeon cut around the opening of the wound with a knife, probed for the arrow with a probe, pulled out the arrow, applied a burning medicine to the mouth of the wound. As a result of his applying a burning medicine to the mouth of the wound, I felt fierce, sharp, racking pains. But now that the wound is healed and covered with skin, I am well and happy, free, master of myself, able to go wherever I like." In the same way, friend Nigantas, if you knew that you existed in the past and that you did not not exist, if you knew that you did bad actions in the past and that you did not not do them, if you knew that you did such and such bad actions in the past, if you knew that so and so much suffering has been ended, or that so and so much suffering remains to be ended, or that with the ending of so and so much suffering, all suffering will be ended, if you knew what is the abandoning of unskillful mental qualities and the attainment of skillful mental qualities in the here and now, then, that being the case, it would be proper for you to assert that whatever a person experiences, pleasure, pain, or neither pleasure nor pain, all is caused by what was done in the past. Thus, with the destruction of old actions through asceticism, and with the non-doing of new actions, there will be no consequence in the future. With no consequence in the future, there is the ending of action. With the ending of action, the ending of suffering. With the ending of suffering, the ending of feeling. With the ending of feeling, all suffering will be ended. But because you do not know that you existed in the past, you do not know that you did bad actions in the past and that you did not not do them, you do not know that you did such and such bad actions in the past, you do not know that so and so much suffering has been ended, or that so and so much suffering remains to be ended, or that with the ending of so and so much suffering, all suffering will be ended, you do not know what is the abandoning of unskillful mental qualities and the attainment of skillful mental qualities in the here and now, then, that being the case, it is not proper for you to assert that whatever a person experiences, pleasure, pain, or neither pleasure nor pain, all is caused by what was done in the past. Thus, with the destruction of old actions through asceticism and with the non-doing of new actions, there will be no consequence in the future. With no consequence in the future, there is the ending of action. With the ending of action, the ending of suffering. With the ending of suffering, the ending of feeling. With the ending of feeling, all suffering will be ended. When this was said, the Nigantas said to me, "Friend, the Niganta Nataputta is all-knowing, all-seeing, and claims total knowledge and vision thus. Whether I am walking or standing, sleeping or awake, knowledge and vision are continuously and continually established in me." He has told us, "Nigantas, there are bad actions that you have done in the past. Exhaust them with these painful austerities. When in the present you are restrained in body, restrained in speech, and restrained in mind, that is the non-doing of bad action for the future. Thus, with the destruction of old actions through asceticism, and with the non-doing of new actions, there will be no consequence in the future. With no consequence in the future, there is the ending of action. With the ending of action, the ending of suffering. With the ending of suffering, the ending of feeling. With the ending of feeling, all suffering will be ended. We approve of that teaching, prefer it, and are gratified by it. When this was said, I said to the Naganthas, Friend Naganthas, there are five things that can turn out in two ways in the here and now. Which five? Faith, preference, oral tradition, reasoning, and acceptance of view by pondering. These are the five things that can turn out in two ways in the here and now. That being the case, what kind of faith do you have for your teacher with regard to the past? What kind of preference? What kind of oral tradition? What kind of reasoning? What kind of acceptance of a view by pondering? But when I said this, I did not see that the Naganthas had any legitimate defence of their teaching. So I asked them further, Friend Naganthas, what do you think? When there is fierce striving, fierce exertion, do you feel fierce, sharp, racking pains from harsh treatment? And when there is no fierce striving, no fierce exertion, do you feel no fierce, sharp, racking pains from harsh treatment? Yes, friend. Then it's not proper for you to assert that, whatever a person experiences, pleasure, pain, or neither pleasure nor pain, all is caused by what was done in the past. Thus, with the destruction of old actions through asceticism, and with the non-doing of new actions, there will be no consequence in the future. With no consequence in the future, there is the ending of action. With the ending of action, the ending of suffering. With the ending of suffering, the ending of feeling. With the ending of feeling, all suffering will be ended. If it were the case that when there was fierce striving, fierce exertion, you felt fierce, sharp, racking pains from harsh treatment, and when there was no fierce striving, no fierce exertion, you still felt fierce, sharp, racking pains from harsh treatment, then, that being the case, it would be proper for you to assert that, whatever a person experiences, pleasure, pain, or neither pleasure nor pain, all is caused by what was done in the past. Thus, with the destruction of old actions through asceticism, and with the non-doing of new actions, there will be no consequence in the future. With no consequence in the future, there is the ending of action. With the ending of action, the ending of suffering. With the ending of suffering, the ending of feeling. With the ending of feeling, all suffering will be ended. But because when there is fierce striving, fierce exertion, you feel fierce, sharp, racking pains from harsh treatment, and when there was no fierce striving, no fierce exertion, you feel no fierce, sharp, racking pains from harsh treatment, then, that being the case, it is not proper for you to assert that, whatever a person experiences, pleasure, pain, or neither pleasure nor pain, all is caused by what was done in the past. Thus, with the destruction of old actions through asceticism, and with the non-doing of new actions, there will be no consequence in the future. With no consequence in the future, there is the ending of action. With the ending of action, the ending of suffering. With the ending of suffering, the ending of feeling. With the ending of feeling, all suffering will be ended. But when I said this, I did not see that the Naganthas had any legitimate defence of their teaching. So I asked them further, Friend Naganthas, what do you think? Can an action to be experienced in the here and now be turned, through striving and exertion, into an action to be experienced in the future life? No, friend. Can an action to be experienced in the future life be turned, through striving and exertion, into an action to be experienced in the here and now? No, friend. What do you think? Can an action to be experienced as pleasure be turned, through striving and exertion, into an action to be experienced as pain? No, friend. Can an action to be experienced as pain be turned, through striving and exertion, into an action to be experienced as pleasure? No, friend. What do you think? Can an action ripe to be experienced be turned, through striving and exertion, into an action not ripe to be experienced? No, friend. Can an action not ripe to be experienced be turned, through striving and exertion, into an action ripe to be experienced? No friend. What do you think? Can an action greatly to be experienced be turned, through striving and exertion, into an action barely to be experienced? No friend. Can an action barely to be experienced be turned, through striving and exertion, into an action greatly to be experienced? No friend. What do you think? Can an action to be experienced be turned, through striving and exertion, into an action not to be experienced? No friend. Can an action not to be experienced be turned, through striving and exertion, into an action to be experienced? No friend. So, friends, it seems that an action to be experienced in the here and now cannot be turned, through striving and exertion, into an action to be experienced in the future life. An action to be experienced in the future life cannot be turned, through striving and exertion, into an action to be experienced in the here and now. An action to be experienced as pleasure cannot be turned, through striving and exertion, into an action to be experienced as pain. An action to be experienced as pain cannot be turned, through striving and exertion, into an action to be experienced as pleasure. An action ripe to be experienced cannot be turned, through striving and exertion, into an action not ripe to be experienced. An action not ripe to be experienced cannot be turned, through striving and exertion, into an action ripe to be experienced. An action greatly to be experienced cannot be turned, through striving and exertion, into an action barely to be experienced. An action barely to be experienced cannot be turned, through striving and exertion, into an action greatly to be experienced. An action to be experienced cannot be turned, through striving and exertion, into an action not to be experienced. An action not to be experienced cannot be turned, through striving and exertion, into an action to be experienced. That being the case, the striving of the Nagantas is fruitless. Their exertion is fruitless. Such is the teaching of the Nagantas, and such being the teaching of the Nagantas, 10 legitimate deductions can be drawn that give grounds for censuring them. If beings experience pleasure and pain based on what was done in the past, then obviously the Nagantas have done bad things in the past, which is why they now feel such fierce, sharp, racking pains. If beings experience pleasure and pain based on the creative act of a supreme god, then obviously the Nagantas have been created by a bad supreme god, which is why they now feel such fierce, sharp, racking pains. If beings experience pleasure and pain based on sheer luck, then obviously the Nagantas have bad luck, which is why they now feel such fierce, sharp, racking pains. If beings experience pleasure and pain based on birth, then obviously the Nagantas have had a bad birth, which is why they now feel such fierce, sharp, racking pains. If beings experience pleasure and pain based on efforts in the here and now, then obviously the Nagantas have bad efforts in the here and now, which is why they now feel such fierce, sharp, racking pains. If beings experience pleasure and pain based on what was done in the past, the Nagantas deserve censure. Even if not, they still deserve censure. If beings experience pleasure and pain based on the creative act of a supreme god, the Nagantas deserve censure. Even if not, they still deserve censure. If beings experience pleasure and pain based on sheer luck, the Nagantas deserve censure. Even if not, they still deserve censure. If beings experience pleasure and pain based on birth, the Nagantas deserve censure. Even if not, they still deserve censure. If beings experience pleasure and pain based on efforts in the here and now, the Nagantas deserve censure. Even if not, they still deserve censure. Such is the teaching of the Nagantas, monks, and such being the teaching of the Nagantas, these 10 legitimate deductions can be drawn that give grounds for censuring them. This is how striving is fruitless, how exertion is fruitless. And how is striving fruitful? How is exertion fruitful? There is the case where a monk, when not loaded down, does not load himself down with pain, nor does he reject pleasure that accords with the Dhamma, although he is not fixated on that pleasure. He discerns that, when I exert a physical, verbal, or mental fabrication against this cause of suffering, then from the fabrication of exertion there is dispassion. When I look on with equanimity at that cause of suffering, then from the development of equanimity there is dispassion. So he exerts a fabrication against the cause of suffering where there comes dispassion from the fabrication of exertion, and develops equanimity with regard to the cause of suffering where there comes dispassion from the development of equanimity. Thus the suffering coming from the cause of suffering for which there is dispassion through the fabrication of exertion is ended, and the suffering resulting from the cause of suffering for which there is dispassion through the development of equanimity is ended. Suppose that a man is in love with a woman, his mind ensnared with fierce desire, fierce passion. He sees her standing with another man, chatting, joking, and laughing. What do you think, monks? As he sees her standing with another man, chatting, joking, and laughing, would sorrow, lamentation, pain, suffering, and despair arise in him? Yes, Lord. Why is that? Because he's in love with her, his mind ensnared with fierce desire, fierce passion. Now suppose the thought were to occur to him, I am in love with this woman, my mind ensnared with fierce desire, fierce passion. When I see her standing with another man, chatting, joking, and laughing, then sorrow, lamentation, pain, suffering, and despair arise within me. Why don't I abandon my desire and passion for that woman? So he abandons his desire and passion for that woman, and afterwards sees her standing with another man, chatting, joking, and laughing. What do you think, monks? As he sees her standing with another man, chatting, joking, and laughing, would sorrow, lamentation, pain, suffering, and despair arise in him? No, Lord. Why is that? He is dispassionate toward that woman. In the same way, the monk, when not loaded down, does not load himself down with pain, nor does he reject pleasure that accords with the Dhamma, although he is not infatuated with that pleasure. He discerns that, when I exert a physical, verbal, or mental fabrication against this cause of suffering, then from that fabrication of exertion there is dispassion. When I look on with equanimity at that cause of suffering, then from the development of equanimity there is dispassion. So he exerts a fabrication against the cause of suffering where there comes dispassion from the fabrication of exertion, and develops equanimity with regard to the cause of suffering where there comes dispassion from the development of equanimity. Thus the suffering coming from the cause of suffering, for which there is dispassion through the fabrication of exertion, is ended. And the suffering resulting from the cause of suffering for which there is dispassion through the development of equanimity is ended. Furthermore, the monk notices this. When I live according to my pleasure, unskillful mental qualities increase in me and skillful qualities decline. When I exert myself with suffering and pain, though, unskillful qualities decline in me and skillful qualities increase. Why don't I exert myself with suffering and pain? So he exerts himself with suffering and pain, and while he is exerting himself with suffering and pain, unskillful qualities decline in him and skillful qualities increase. Then, at a later time, he would no longer exert himself with suffering and pain. Why is that? Because he has attained the goal for which he was exerting himself with suffering and pain. That is why, at a later time, he would no longer exert himself with suffering and pain. Suppose a fletcher were to heat and warm an arrow shaft between two flames, making it straight and pliable. Then at a later time he would no longer heat and warm the shaft between two flames, making it straight and pliable. Why is that? Because he has attained the goal for which he was heating and warming the shaft. That is why at a later time he would no longer heat and warm the shaft between two flames, making it straight and pliable. In the same way the monk notices this. When I live according to my pleasure, unskillful mental qualities increase in me and skillful qualities decline. When I exert myself with suffering and pain, though, unskillful qualities decline in me and skillful qualities increase. Why don't I exert myself with suffering and pain? So he exerts himself with suffering and pain, and while he is exerting himself with suffering and pain, unskillful qualities decline in him and skillful qualities increase. Then at a later time he would no longer exert himself with suffering and pain. Why is that? Because he has attained the goal for which he was exerting himself with suffering and pain. That is why at a later time he would no longer exert himself with suffering and pain. This is how striving is fruitful, how exertion is fruitful. Furthermore, there is the case where a Tathagata appears in the world worthy and rightly self-awakened. He teaches the Dhamma admirable in its beginning, admirable in its middle, admirable in its end. He proclaims the holy life both in its particulars and in its essence, entirely perfect, surpassingly pure. A householder or householder's son, hearing the Dhamma, gains conviction in the Tathagata and reflects, "Household life is confining, a dusty path. Life gone forth is in the open air. It isn't easy, living at home, to practice the holy life totally perfect, totally pure, a polished shell. What if I, having shaved off my hair and beard and putting on the ochre robe, were to go forth from the household life into homelessness?" So after some time he abandons his mass of wealth, large or small, leaves his circle of relatives, large or small, shaves off his hair and beard, puts on the ochre robes, and goes forth from the household life into homelessness. When he has thus gone forth, endowed with a monk's training and livelihood, then, abandoning the taking of life, he abstains from the taking of life. He dwells with his rod laid down, his knife laid down, scrupulous, merciful, compassionate for the welfare of all living beings. Abandoning the taking of what is not given, he abstains from taking what is not given. He takes only what is given, accepts only what is given, lives not by stealth but by means of a self that has become pure. This too is part of his virtue. Abandoning uncelibacy, he lives a celibate life, aloof, refraining from the sexual act that is the villager's way. Abandoning false speech, he abstains from false speech. He speaks the truth, holds to the truth, is firm, reliable, no deceiver of the world. Abandoning divisive speech, he abstains from divisive speech. What he has heard here, he does not tell there to break those people apart from these people here. What he has heard there, he does not tell here to break these people apart from those people there. Thus reconciling those who have broken apart, or cementing those who are united, he loves concord, delights in concord, enjoys concord, speaks things that create concord. Abandoning abusive speech, he abstains from abusive speech. He speaks words that are soothing to the ear, that are affectionate, that go to the heart, that are polite, appealing, and pleasing to people at large. Abandoning idle chatter, he abstains from idle chatter. He speaks in season, speaks what is factual, what is in accordance with the goal, the Dhamma, and the Vinaya. He speaks words worth treasuring, seasonable, reasonable, circumscribed, connected with the goal. He abstains from damaging seed and plant life. He eats only once a day, refraining from the evening meal and from food at the wrong time of day. He abstains from dancing, singing, instrumental music, and from watching shows. He abstains from wearing garlands and from beautifying himself with scents and cosmetics. He abstains from high and luxurious beds and seats. He abstains from accepting gold and money. He abstains from accepting uncooked grain, raw meat, women and girls, male and female slaves, goats and sheep, fowl and pigs, elephants, cattle, steeds and mares, fields and property. He abstains from running messages, from buying and selling, from dealing with false scales, false metals and false measures, from bribery, deception and fraud. He abstains from mutilating, executing, imprisoning, highway robbery, plunder and violence. He is content with a set of robes to provide for his body and alms food to provide for his hunger. Just as a bird, wherever it goes, flies with its wings as its only burden, so too is he content with a set of robes to provide for his body, and alms food to provide for his hunger. Wherever he goes, he takes only his barest necessities along. Endowed with this noble aggregate of virtue, he is inwardly sensitive to the pleasure of being blameless. On seeing a form with the eye, he does not grasp at any theme or details by which, if he were to dwell without restraint over the faculty of the eye, bad, unskilful qualities, such as greed or suffering, might assail him. On hearing a sound with the ear, he does not grasp at any theme or details by which, if he were to dwell without restraint over the faculty of the ear, bad, unskilful qualities, such as greed or suffering, might assail him. On smelling an odour with the nose, he does not grasp at any theme or details by which, if he were to dwell without restraint over the faculty of the nose, bad, unskilful qualities, such as greed or suffering, might assail him. On tasting a flavour with the tongue, he does not grasp at any theme or details by which, if he were to dwell without restraint over the faculty of the tongue, bad, unskilful qualities, such as greed or suffering, might assail him. On touching a tactile sensation with the body, he does not grasp at any theme or details by which, if he were to dwell without restraint over the faculty of the body, bad, unskilful qualities, such as greed or suffering, might assail him. On cognizing an idea with the intellect, he does not grasp at any theme or details by which, if he were to dwell without restraint over the faculty of the intellect, bad, unskilful qualities, such as greed or suffering, might assail him. Endowed with this noble restraint over the sense faculties, he is inwardly sensitive to the pleasure of being blameless. When going forward and returning, he acts with alertness. When looking toward and looking away, he acts with alertness. When bending and extending his limbs, he acts with alertness. When carrying his outer cloak, his upper robe and his bowl, he acts with alertness. When eating, drinking, chewing and tasting, he acts with alertness. When urinating and defecating, he acts with alertness. When walking, standing, sitting, falling asleep, waking up, talking and remaining silent, he acts with alertness. Endowed with this noble aggregate of virtue, this noble restraint over the sense faculties, this noble mindfulness and alertness, he seeks out a secluded dwelling, a wilderness, the shade of a tree, a mountain, a glen, a hillside cave, a charnel ground, a forest grove, the open air, a heap of straw. After his meal, returning from his arms round, he sits down, crosses his legs, holds his body erect, and brings mindfulness to the fore. Abandoning covetousness with regard to the world, he dwells with an awareness devoid of covetousness. He cleanses his mind of covetousness. Abandoning ill will and anger, he dwells with an awareness devoid of ill will, sympathetic with the welfare of all living beings. He cleanses his mind of ill will and anger. Abandoning sloth and drowsiness, he dwells with an awareness devoid of sloth and drowsiness, mindful, alert, percipient of light. He cleanses his mind of sloth and drowsiness. Abandoning restlessness and anxiety, he dwells undisturbed, his mind inwardly stilled. He cleanses his mind of restlessness and anxiety. Abandoning uncertainty, he dwells, having crossed over uncertainty, with no perplexity with regard to skilful mental qualities. He cleanses his mind of uncertainty. Having abandoned these five hindrances, imperfections of awareness that weaken discernment, then, quite withdrawn from sensual pleasures, withdrawn from unskilful mental qualities, he enters and remains in the first jhana. Rapture and pleasure born from withdrawal, accompanied by direct thought and evaluation. This too is how striving is fruitful, how exertion is fruitful. Then, with the stilling of directed thoughts and evaluations, he enters and remains in the second jhana. Rapture and pleasure born of composure, one-pointedness of awareness free from directed thought and evaluation, internal assurance. This too is how striving is fruitful, how exertion is fruitful. Then with the fading of rapture he remains equanimous, mindful and alert, and senses pleasure with the body. He enters and remains in the third jhana, of which the noble ones declare, equanimous and mindful, he has a pleasant abiding. This too is how striving is fruitful, how exertion is fruitful. Then with the abandoning of pleasure and pain, as with the earlier disappearance of elation and suffering, he enters and remains in the fourth jhana, purity of equanimity and mindfulness, neither pleasure nor pain. This too is how striving is fruitful, how exertion is fruitful. With his mind thus in samadhi, purified and bright, unblemished, free from defects, pliant, malleable, steady, and attained to imperturbability, he directs and inclines it to knowledge of the recollection of past lives. He recollects his manifold past lives, that is, one birth, two births, three births, four, five, 10, 20, 30, 40, 50, 100, 1,000, 100,000, many aeons of cosmic contraction, many aeons of cosmic expansion, many aeons of cosmic contraction and expansion, recollecting, there I had such a name, belonged to such a clan, had such an appearance. Such was my food, such my experience of pleasure and pain, such the end of my life. Passing away from that state, I re-arose there. There too I had such a name, belonged to such a clan, had such an appearance. Such was my food, such my experience of pleasure and pain, such the end of my life. Passing away from that state, I re-arose here. Thus he recollects his manifold past lives in their modes and details. This too is how striving is fruitful, how exertion is fruitful. With his mind thus in samadhi, purified and bright, unblemished, free from defects, pliant, malleable, steady, and attained to imperturbability, he directs and inclines it to knowledge of the passing away and reappearance of beings. He sees, by means of the divine eye, purified and surpassing the human, beings passing away and reappearing, and he discerns how they are inferior and superior, beautiful and ugly, fortunate and unfortunate, in accordance with their karma. These beings, who were endowed with bad conduct of body, speech and mind, who reviled the noble ones, held wrong views and undertook actions under the influence of wrong views, with the break-up of the body after death, have reappeared in the plane of deprivation, the bad destination, the lower realms, in hell. But these beings who were endowed with good conduct of body, speech and mind, who did not revile the noble ones, who held right views and undertook actions under the influence of right views, with the break-up of the body after death, have reappeared in the good destinations, in the heavenly world. Thus, by means of the divine eye, purified and surpassing the human, he sees beings passing away and reappearing, and he discerns how they are inferior and superior, beautiful and ugly, fortunate and unfortunate in accordance with their karma. This too is how striving is fruitful, how exertion is fruitful. With his mind thus in samadhi, purified and bright, unblemished, free from defects, pliant, malleable, steady, and attained to imperturbability, the monk directs and inclines it to the knowledge of the ending of the mental defilements. He discerns, as it has come to be, that this is suffering, this is the origination of suffering, this is the cessation of suffering, this is the way leading to the cessation of suffering. These are mental defilements, this is the origination of defilements, this is the cessation of defilements, this is the way leading to the cessation of defilements. His heart, thus knowing, thus seeing, is released from the defilement of sensuality, the defilement of attachment to rebirth, the defilement of ignorance. With release, there is the knowledge released. He discerns that birth is ended, the holy life fulfilled, the task done, There is nothing further for this world. This, too, is how striving is fruitful, how exertion is fruitful. Such is the teaching of the Tathagata, and such being the teaching of the Tathagata, 10 legitimate deductions can be drawn that give grounds for praising him. If beings experience pleasure and pain based on what was done in the past, then obviously the Tathagata has done good deeds in the past, which is why he now feels such pleasure free from defilement. If beings experience pleasure and pain based on the creative act of a supreme god, then obviously the Tathagata has been created by an excellent supreme god, which is why he now feels such pleasure free from defilement. If beings experience pleasure and pain based on sheer luck, then obviously the Tathagata has admirable luck, which is why he now feels such pleasure free from defilement. If beings experience pleasure and pain based on birth, then obviously the Tathagata has had an admirable birth, which is why he now feels such pleasure free from defilement. If beings experience pleasure and pain based on efforts in the here and now, then obviously the Tathagata has admirable efforts in the here and now, which is why he now feels such pleasure free from defilement. If beings experience pleasure and pain based on what was done in the past, the Tathagata deserves praise. Even if not, he still deserves praise. If beings experience pleasure and pain based on the creative act of a supreme god, the Tathagata deserves praise. Even if not, he still deserves praise. If beings experience pleasure and pain based on sheer luck, the Tathagata deserves praise. Even if not, he still deserves praise. If beings experience pleasure and pain based on birth, the Tathagata deserves praise. Even if not, he still deserves praise. If beings experience pleasure and pain based on efforts in the here and now, the Tathagata deserves praise. Even if not, he still deserves praise. Such is the teaching of the Tathagata, and such being the teaching of the Tathagata, these 10 legitimate deductions can be drawn that give grounds for praising him. That is what the Blessed One said. Gratified, the monks delighted in the Blessed One's words.